Live from Studio 66, it's the Dave Dameshek Football Program. Catch it on iTunes or at NFL.com/Sheck. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
Hi and hello, football fans. It's your old pal Dave, Dave Dameshek. What's going down? I hope all's well wherever you are. Welcome to the Dave Dameshek Football Program, available as always on iTunes and at NFL.com/Sheck. Yes, another good show lined up for you on the heels of what was really a very well-received episode earlier in the week. We had Daniel Jeremiah, a.k.a. At Move the Sticks, and we kept falling into some very interesting thoughts here. One, I floated the idea that Calvin Johnson is going to retire as the greatest wide receiver of all time, maybe even jumping Jerry Rice, and at the very worst, he may well be the best. He may be the second best wide receiver in history right now. He may be that. So go back and listen to it. He had some great thoughts. He figured out Drew Brees' tell when he's about to throw a deep ball. That was good stuff. What else, Black Tie? There was a lot of
great. I just wanted to go back to the poll that we had up following that episode on the blog. It was as debated on DDFP 201. Who is the second best receiver in NFL history? Calvin Johnson, Randy Moss, Michael Irvin, T.O. were options. Calvin Johnson landslide at 60%. Terrell Owens last, Michael Irvin third, Randy Moss second at 25%.
We should have also put Steve Largent in there. I think that's the group, but I mean those are the names that you consider. And to the point that we were making, there really is a gigantic drop off from Jerry Rice to number two. And as far as that goes, I was talking about it later in the green room with Heath Evans, formerly of the Saints and Patriots, to name drop. And we continued this conversation. He had an interesting point, and I don't know. I'll be interested to get the guy seated across from me right now, his opinion on this. Heath Evans said, if Jerry Rice were in the NFL right now, he would be just another wide receiver. Because at the time, Jerry Rice was considered to be a big wide out, which he wouldn't be any longer. He's 6'2". He'd be of average size, about 200 pounds. And even though he never was known as a burner, he would be downright slow among wide receivers these days. How say you? Let's say hello to him. You know him from NFL.com as well as NFL Fantasy Live. Right now he's got up there his power rankings. His picks are coming up for you for Week 9. We'll do our Red Challenge Flag segment with him where we pick some big games. And also, all sorts of talk right now at NFL.com from this guy and many others on the midseason. We've reached the midway point in the season. There's a new Shame/Sheck report up there for your perusal as well at NFL.com. Let's say hello to him. It's Elliot Harrison. What's the poop, fella?
Hey, man, I got to jump in right there with where you teed me up. Jerry Rice. Here's the deal. Jerry Rice ran a 4.59. That was the fastest he ever ran. Okay, so basically a 4.6. It's real easy to say all these guys are bigger, faster, stronger today. That's not true because I'm going to tell you a little story. Brian Baldinger, who works for us, he told me his favorite game was Cowboys-Patriots 1984. I had a copy of the game that I got for him, and I thought, I'm going to watch it. So I was watching the pregame. The Patriots had four wide receivers on their roster, including Stanley Morgan, who I'm sure you remember, and Irving Fryer,
right?
Who all ran a sub-4.45. How many teams right now have four wide receivers that run a sub-4.45? And this was in 1984, mind you. Players aren't faster. Maybe at certain positions they might be faster, but wide receivers aren't any faster than they were.
Well, but the combo of speed and size, though. Jerry Rice could make up for the lack of speed. I mean, I don't think that, off the top of my head, this is a terrible example, but Alshon Jeffrey, who's at least been coming on of late, is not a burner, but he's big at least. Jerry Rice would be neither. I'm not saying I agree with Heath Evans,
If you look at all of Jerry Rice's touchdowns, they're not touchdowns where he's being thrown back shoulder fades like Calvin Johnson. He's out leaping people or Randy Moss. They're all timing patterns because the best thing about Jerry Rice would not change now. Every route looked the same. Every route, everything he did looked the same. So corners didn't have any tells with him. They didn't know when he was running an out versus when he was running a post. I don't think those things ever go out of style. And I'm just going to throw one other name at you. I think you have to consider Lance Allworth if you're going to mention.
Ah, yes.
First AFL player nominated for the Hall of Fame, 1965 in 14 games, 14 games, he had 1,600 yards and 14 touchdowns.
Going back to EH's point, though, like, yeah, you can't teach speed, so, you know, guys are going to be as fast as they are then and now, but the physicality, getting bigger, getting stronger, that you can't teach. The reason why the players today are bigger and stronger is because of workout routines, because of nutrition. If Jerry Rice was in today's game, I'm sure he'd be bigger and stronger because he would be.
He would learn it, right?
So. Fair point. I'm not. I just like throwing out the argument because it's at least it caught my ear.
We should ask Rod Woodson about that.
Well, we have Rod Woodson coming up momentarily here. This is a real treat for you, EH, as someone who loves kibitzing about the history of football, and same as me, and he just so happens to be a Pittsburgh Steelers legend. And, you know, it's a great thing. We used to see him knocking around the hallways here until he went off to do some coaching, and now he's doing some broadcasting for Westwood One. And, I talked to him about that. I said, well, you know, who do you identify with? You know, if one team as a fan now that you're retired, what's the team you now root for if you have to pick? And he lives in the Bay Area, and he said the Steelers, and that's enough for me. That's enough for him. Now I'm a fan for life. You know, I enjoyed him already, but now, you know, if he said, because I don't know, maybe he would say the Ravens or something like that, and then I'd be sick in my gut. I still haven't gotten over hearing Terry Bradshaw say, when interviewed once about 5-6 years ago, say, the one regret I have in my career is that I didn't get to play for the Raiders. That would have been cool to play for Al Davis, and I vomited. How dare you? You didn't know it wasn't enough getting those rings in Pittsburgh?
You know,
outrageous.
I'll tell you, and it may have been a little premature at the time, but to even be in the conversation, the fact that Rod Woodson was entering his eighth year in the league when the NFL named their all-time team, their 75th anniversary team, and he was one of the corners. And he's entering his eighth year. I mean, he hadn't even done half the things yet. He hadn't won it with the Ravens yet. He hadn't had the knee issue in 95 where he came back and played in the Super Bowl. He hadn't even done that yet, and he'd already been named to the NFL's all-time team.
I saw him play live. Interesting point. I can't wait to let him know about that. I saw him play live when he was still at Purdue, when he was a schoolboy, when he was highly regarded and played both sides of the ball. All right, hey, it's midseason of 2013, and EH, I've gone on, and at NFL.com you can see me rave again about Aaron Rodgers. I feel like that is the thing that we're sleeping on a little bit collectively, is the greatness of Aaron Rodgers. We're watching the greatest of all time, and we're busy talking about anything but that. But all right, let's talk about what you're talking about. Your midseason All-Pros are up there right now. Do you want to share with us your broad strokes? What is the most pleasant surprise to you so far this year?
Well, my pleasant surprise, unfortunately, did not make the All-Pro team, because Peyton Manning, to me, has to be the quarterback, and he has to be the MVP. But, geez, Phillip Rivers, how could there be?
It's interesting.
If I had any way of squeezing one more guy on this team, it would have been Phillip Rivers. A surprise, more of a smaller guy or smaller name, is Jason Hatcher of the Dallas Cowboys, defensive tackle. Their defense has been terrible. They're playing guys off the street, and he just keeps excelling. I believe he has 7 sacks, which from defensive tackle in 8 games is a sick figure. The guy is unblockable, and to think that the guy barely even played his first couple years in the league, he's just outstanding.
What player has been the most disappointing to you so far?
Oof. Wow. You know, Michael Vick has been disappointing only because, once again, he can't stay healthy. Mm-hmm. Remember how – I think it's amazing – how distant the opening Monday night game against the Redskins seems now. I mean, how fired up were people on Twitter while that game was going on? Like, oh, you know, the Eagles offense is going to just revolutionize the NFL. You thought Michael Vick was going to have a monster year for as long as he could stay healthy. Then what happened?
It's interesting. And Jeremiah, I know we keep talking about him, putting him up on, putting him into a Hall of Fame of some sort, I guess, because I keep referring to what he had to say. But it really was a fascinating thought that he said. He said he talks to a lot of coaches, and they all are stealing stuff from Chip Kelly. As he said, the revolution is real. It's just that he can't keep a quarterback healthy to run his system, but the rest of the NFL has taken note, and no one thinks that, whoa, what Chip Kelly, because I dug into him pretty good on the Sheck Report this week, Chip Kelly and this illusion that Jeffrey Lurie could sue him for fraud at this point for being an offensive wizard. Huh. But anyway, that's interesting. Yeah, Mike Vick, at some point, you know, it's not fair to say a guy is hurt, so he's disappointing, but at this point, when you're Mike Vick, it really is. I mean, that is the story. It's, I mean, anybody who plays fantasy football knows that. Yeah, you can't. He's an undraftable guy because you know that this is coming.
And I think we've gotten to a point, and maybe Black Tie has a different opinion, where people are actually rooting for Michael Vick now. I really don't think there are a lot of Michael Vick haters left out there. Some people are indifferent. I think people are tired of seeing him hurt all the time.
Yeah,
I think they want to see what he can do.
Yeah, that's what I think it is more so. It's people are indifferent for one, and there's not as much vitriol to his going up against him as like before. And plus, people are just tired of seeing him hurt. It's like, dude, you always hurt. Like, who's going to take another chance on him? Like, what's the point of bringing him into a team when you know he's only going to give you at max like eight games?
Right. It's really analogous, I think, to Danny Amendola. I mean. People are tired of talking about Danny Amendola. Danny Amendola is tired of talking about his injuries, and the Patriots committed a lot of money to him. And once again, he's hurt, just like he's been two of the last three years.
But it's even worse with a quarterback because you're tailoring your system to a QB, and you
totally
can replace
agree.
A wide receiver, but with a quarterback, you might as well just not even bring him into your camp.
Real quick, as we wait for Rod Woodson here, give me a team that is looking good right now that is an illusion and is going to fall back to the pack in the second half of the year.
Ooh. Well, I think, unfortunately, I guess it depends on your idea of looking good. I don't think Kansas City is as good as their record indicates. They've struggled against Houston. They struggled last week against Cleveland. I think they lose one of their matchups to San Diego, and I think they lose both games to Denver. I still think they'll finish 12-4. If I had to go the other side of it, a team that I think could sneak in the playoffs is the San Diego Chargers. I actually think the two wild cards will be the Kansas City Chiefs 5 seed and San Diego 6 seed.
It's funny, people. I get grief every time I make predictions about how the teams are going to be seeded, and I say 5-6. This year I start. I'm going to be wrong, obviously, but I said that the Rams and Seahawks were going to get the two wild cards, and the Niners would win the division. Obviously, I'm way off on how that's going to shake out. But people say two wild cards from the same division. Do you
Come
pay
on.
Attention to football? It's like, yeah, I do, and it happens a lot, and that happens even more now. Because if a division happens to be talented, you are playing if you happen to stack up, you get by the luck of the draw, you are playing a bum division that is lousy. If that's your draw in a given year, your division gets a bad division, then you're all going to make hay against the bad division. All of you are going to have a good record, and as a result, you sneak into the playoffs that way.
Absolutely. Look at 2011. Baltimore made it. They went to the AFC Championship. Pittsburgh got beat by Tim Tebow in the wild card, and Cincinnati went to Houston and lost at Reliant. Three
yep.
playoff teams.
It happens way more than you think it does. So what team is, because the Chargers, I can't let you off the hook at that. They're 4-3 and they're under the radar, but they're not playing badly at this point. And I'll, by the way, if you're the Chargers, maybe they'll still figure out a way into the playoffs. But the one that has to make you sick is that week one game against Houston that you had them beat.
Oh,
yes. You give them that one, then you're talking about 5-2.
That's right. If the now hurt Brian Cushing doesn't make an incredible diving interception deep in San Diego's territory, boy, the Chargers would be 5-3. That's a great point. But if you're talking about a team that's really truly under the radar, I don't know if you can say the Carolina Panthers are under the radar anymore, Dave. I mean, I would have said that a week ago.
No,
but
I won't stand for it. They're 4-3. You
okay.
can't say a team that's going to do well in the second half has a winning record in the first half. A team that is, at worst, I'll allow you to say one that is .500.
Okay.
But that's as far as I'll let you go.
Okay. Well, if that's as far as you'll let me go, I'm going to tell you right now that there's not one team that is currently under .500 that I think is going to make the playoffs.
Hmm.
If I had to pick the closest,
who's going to have a winning record?
The closest thing to what you're talking about to me would be the Bears. I still don't think the Bears are done. They're 4-3, but nobody thinks of them that way because they're missing Briggs.
Right.
They have all these injuries, but they have a pretty good backup quarterback as compared to other teams. I would rather have McCown than a lot of the backups across the league. And I think the Bears can beat any team in the North when they're right, including the Packers.
I hadn't considered this until I asked it of you. I wasn't going to give my answer. The Dolphins are interesting. I don't think the Ravens. I think they're going to make a push because look at their record the rest of the way. It is cupcake after Cupcake, but the problem for them is that's also the case for the Bengals.
Yes.
If the Bengals win in 2 weeks against the Ravens, the division will be pretty much over with. So I don't think they're going to get into they're not going to steal the North, but I could be wrong on that one. I think the Texans are legitimately done. I think the Titans are going to have a better second half than they did first half, and they were pretty close to having a strong first half. You could almost make
Jake Locker's got to run more. I don't know why he does not run more.
I think you're going to see it the last 3 weeks. I keep calling it out more and more with each passing week. Here comes the pistol, and anybody who can run it is going to have success doing it. So watch out for them. Last thing. The New York Giants. They're 2-6. They're a joke, so on and so forth.
Nope.
Can they get back into this lousy division race?
No, I don't like
that. I mean, they're in it now. They're only two games
back. They're in it, and I know that's the chic thing. Everyone's bringing it up. Kind of like everyone told you ad nauseum how the Rams went 4-1-1 in the division. If I have to hear that the Rams, you know, tied the Niners and beat the Niners and Seahawks one more time, I'm going to throw up. But I definitely think the Giants are done. They don't play well defensively. Eli Manning turns the football over. The running back, we're talking about Andre Brown like being the second coming. Andre Brown is Andre Brown. The offense is completely out of sync. And let's not forget, they're 1-2 in the division already. I mean, mm-hmm. They've already lost to Dallas once. So the best they can hope for is a division split. And that's a problem. And the other thing that's going against the Giants right now is they're 2.5 back. By virtue of that loss, right. They're not just 2 games back, they're 2.5 back. It's not like we got 10 or 11 games to play. We only have 8 games to play. Have they really played that well that you could see them going 6-2 down the back stretch? Really?
No, I can't. But, you know, listen, they're suddenly back in it because they're in a crummy division, so I bring them up. Last thing real quick. So KC is going to get one of the two wild cards. You say the Chargers will get the other. Who is going to get? We know that the Niners are at worst going to get. Well, it'll either be the Seahawks or Niners. Probably the Niners are your 5 seed, but who's going to get that other one? Because it's pretty interesting. The Cardinals are there lurking. You know, they're 4-4, and they're not bad. And Bruce Arians has had some success. Everybody talks about the Colts last year. Carson Palmer is pretty crummy, and the more people I talk to who are breaking down X's and O's say, boy, I don't think it's out about how bad he is. So, all right, let's rule them out. So, to me, it's Carolina, it's Chicago, it's Detroit. Who gets it?
I think it's the Carolina Panthers. You look at their conference record right now, it's 4-2. So is Detroit's, but Carolina, and Detroit has a better record. Detroit's 5-3. Carolina already had their bye, they're 4-3. But Carolina can play defense. They're giving up the second fewest points in the league, and look at their division right now. Tampa Bay is horrible, okay? Atlanta is completely decimated. They don't have Julio Jones. Steven Jackson's been hurt. Roddy White's been playing hurt. And their defense already wasn't great. I mean, we could agree on that with the Falcons. It was all about their offense. Yes, they have 2 games with the Saints. They'll probably lose them both. Who cares? Doesn't mean they still can't go 10-6 or 9-7 and get that 6th seed.
All right, EH, here's what we'll do, because Rod Woodson is going to be here in a minute. We'll stop down here. You go do your network hit right now, and Rod Woodson will presumably be coming in. And as soon as you're done, I don't want you to miss out on Rod Woodson. Come right back. Oh, and we also got to do the Red Challenge Flag segment, too, don't forget. So we got to make your picks on the big games.
Go Michael Fabiano coming up for fantasy as well.
Oh, yes, we got Fabiano for a midseason fantasy report. And your foe in the Red Challenge Flag segment is a surprise this week. We got a special foe for you to challenge this week. All right, let's stop
not,
it down and
is
get
it
right.
Bane?
It's not Bane. But I don't. I'm, that's all I'm going to say about it. Like,
I was wondering what would break first, your spirit or your body.
All right, that's it.
I think I do a better Bane than you.
Oh wow!
This is a challenge.
Go ahead. Let's hear it. Go ahead and do it.
You think darkness is your ally?
That's not bad.
Speak of the devil, he shall appear.
That was atrocious. That second one was really bad. What's wrong with it? Did Bane suffer a head injury or something in that second one? I don't know what happened to him there.
It's a different line.
No, not very good. Not very good. Like, what?
Speak of the devil, and he shall appear.
See, that's pretty good. I turn to you, EH. Which one's better?
Blacked Out, I love you, man. I really do. But, dude, that's not even
Yeah, it's not one of my strong suits. I figured I'd give it a shot, though.
You all do right. Bane like Andre Brown is the second coming.
All right, here he comes. You go Don't talk to him on your way out the door. Here he is, everybody. And this is not just my usual hooey and applesauce. This isn't just a Hall of Famer. This is one of the very best, if not the best, to ever play his position in the NFL. I'm a big fan. I'm from Pittsburgh, PA, after all. He's one of the best to ever wear that glorious helmet that has the logo only on one side of it. It's Rod Woodson. What's the poop, fella?
What's going on? The poop. Is that like a Pittsburgh lingo?
I don't know. You lived in Pittsburgh for a long time.
I wasn't there for – I wasn't born or raised there. I know they have their own little things like – Yen up. Was it Yen up?
Yens. Yeah. Yens. Yens going to go downtown for the Steelers game this weekend.
They have that and the red up. That's what it is. Isn't red up mean like clean up? Clean the room or something like that. I know they have that little book. It's like, 25 to 30 pages where it talks about the Pittsburgh lingo?
The Yenser speak. Warsh is a big one.
Yens.
Gum bands instead of rubber bands. Oh, it goes on and on.
When I first got there and they said Yens, I thought they were talking about Chinese money. I had no idea what they're talking about.
I have to say, I love the city of Pittsburgh, but I do also say that has got to be the least attractive accent in America.
It's different.
Yeah, it's weird sounding. Yeah.
It's definitely different.
I have to tell you, no one will care about this, including you but me, but I feel obliged to say it anyway. In 1985, I went with Pitt to with Mike Gottfried, the head coach at the time, the Pitt Panthers. I paid a visit to Ross-Ade Stadium when you were a senior with Purdue, and you were playing with one Jeff George. He came out, he threw two touchdown passes in the first, I think, 3 or 4 minutes of the game. You guys were up 14-0. I think the final was 42-14 Pitt, but do you remember that game?
It was, but you're a little off on the year. Well, the year is right, but it wasn't Jeff George in 85. That was
Jim Everett?
No. Yes, it was Jim Everett. Excuse me. Yeah, it was Jim Everett. Jim was a quarterback. Jeff was the quarterback my senior year. That was my sophomore year.
Oh, well, I remember.
No, excuse me. That was my junior year. My fault. That was my junior year, and Pitt came back and beat us in a close game. We had opportunity to win, and Jeff was running a bootleg, and receiver's wide open, and he threw it.
I was at that game too. That was in Pitt Stadium. That was the season opener, and Purdue was, or at least Jim Everett was being touted as a Heisman guy at that point. I was at that game. That was Jim Everett. That was Everett who rolled to his left, and he tried to throw. He had the guy was
wide open.
Was about the distance from me to you.
That was
and he
85.
Threw in his feet.
That was 85. Jeff George played with me my senior year.
Okay, then so that was 87.
That was
then.
Well 86 year.
86.
80. Yeah. 86. 87.
What do you make of the career at the time that you got a look at Jeff George? Obviously, he was highly considered. What do you make now, all these years later, of the career Jeff George put together?
I mean, he had a great career, not the one that, I think everybody thought he could have.
Yeah, because he was the youngsters out there may not know, but when Jeff George was in high school and even into college, people were saying, oh, this is going to be the next guy. This is the next big one in the history of the NFL.
You know, his freshman year, we were in spring training or something. I don't know what it was, but he rolled out to his right. He planted through underhand. Back across the field outside the numbers, strike. And I'm like, what in the world? And it just, he had that much talent. And it just didn't, it just didn't really come together in the National Football League. He would put stretches together for having some good games. I think everybody saw that talent, but everybody saw the bad games too. He was just inconsistent. But man, just pure God given ability, man, he had it.
And people love him, too, his teammates at least, right? I mean, the notion that Jeff George was unpopular is false.
Unpopular with his teammates.
Within the locker room,
yeah. The players loved him. He's a good guy to be around. I think what he did, I think sometimes he challenged the coaches. Coaches don't like that. I think the real good coaches can handle it. The coaches he had didn't like it.
What do you make of then Dez Bryant's behavior? Because this is it's easy to say Dez Bryant shouldn't carry on like that on the sidelines. But then again, there are so many examples, and we hear it all the time. We hear praise for Michael Jordan doing that to his teammates. We see Peyton Manning and Tom Brady do it to their guys. Nobody bats an eye about that. What's the difference between those guys and Dez Bryant carrying on?
Well, I mean, to me, first of all, when you looked at the little – spat between Dez and Tony Romo. Dez is this really talking about nobody can handle us. We are the best in the league. What's wrong with that? Who cares?
Nothing. I agree completely.
I want my guy to do that. I really do. I want my guys to be that. I don't know what was going on with Jason Witten and Dez Bryant. I never heard the audio of that one. I don't have a problem with Dez being on the sideline and wanting to win. I really don't. I think sometimes, you know, when you look at that situation, Dez is one of those guys that has a lot of baggage. It's not really bad baggage, but has some baggage with him. So anything he does is over-scrutinized. Mm. And then when you deal with any of the quarterbacks or great players, especially, let's just talk about football, any of the quarterbacks that will get to that situation and do that, they're praised for it. He's a great leader. Mm-hmm. He has moxie. He's going to get in your face. But then if Dez does it, don't act like that on the sideline. You're carrying like a little child. You're distracting from the team. You know, I think it's hypocritical. I think Dez has all the right to be that way because he believes his football team is good. He believes that he's a great player, and I think he's on the verge of being a great player because the guy's made some, a lot of great plays for him, and he's really the only playmaker that that offense really has.
Yeah, well, agreed, and in spite of the fact that you have future Hall of Famer Jason Witten and some other people out there,
he's a Hall of Famer.
You know, well, I mean, listen, statistically, I don't know how you would be able to keep him out.
Well,
I love this. Why? You know what? This
I don't
is
think
what
he's
I want.
A Hall of Famer.
Wow.
I don't think Jason. I love his numbers. The numbers are there. But we're going to have to get to a point in our league that you can't go by numbers anymore.
That's true.
You can't. You just – now, with that being said, the question mark is this. When you play against Jason Witten, did you ever game plan against him? We never did. Mm-hmm. We only played him a couple times, but we never game planned against him. So, you know, that's the question. I just don't think he is, and especially when I look at Shannon Sharp, it took Shannon several years to get into it. Tony Gonzalez, he might be the first tight end to go in on the first ballot.
Hmm.
There's no tight end's ever been on the first ballot. So Tony might be the first one to do that.
Kellen Winslow didn't go in on a first ballot? Really?
Yeah, you know, it's crazy, right?
Wow. Look who's joining us now. Dallas Cowboys fan, Elliot Harrison.
GQ.
Yeah, don't.
Three-piece
you're only encouraged.
Suit.
You're only encouraging that sort of thing. Three
people. This is one of my favorite colleagues ever right here.
Yeah, I love them too.
The suit is awesome, man.
You like the three
people. I mean, anytime we can have Delton Hall join us in the studio, I get excited.
No, you're confused. That's not the right Steelers corner.
Oh.
No. Yeah, played on the other
please,
side.
Oh. Please don't say I'm Delton Hall.
No.
Belton Delton.
Hey, let me tell you this. We just veered into something that I have wanted to do for some time. And, in fact, we brought it up. People on Twitter hit me up with good names for this segment. The correct name for it is, and I will give you credit for it, listener. Thank you for the tweet. It is Hall or Nothing. That's it. Well, I want to ask a Gold Jacket guy whether or not guys playing currently or maybe who just retired will get their Gold Jacket. And if they deserve it, I'm going to bring you up to speed, Elliot. He just said Jason Witten doesn't deserve a Gold Jacket.
That's a tough one. You know, I don't think he's a slam dunk. You know, I always have a hard time because I write our Hall of Fame stuff here, and I'm always trying to prognosticate. And you're not in that room. You're not sitting there with the voters.
We don't vote.
Right. And so
get a vote. Who should get a vote besides you guys? Why would the writers get it?
Or at least
why wouldn't you get a percent? I swear it would be more interesting if it was one third. Well, I don't know the balance, but the writers, fine. But also players, the guys in the hall should have it, and then maybe like 10% fans.
This is what I say. No fans. This is what I say. They get 44 voters, right? Mm-hmm. That's what we get. That's what you get for in the Hall of Fame. 33 should be writers. 11 should be players who are in the Hall of Fame. You rotate that seat. The problem I have with the format, the way it's given now, some of those AP writers who don't even follow football anymore, they vote for life.
Yeah,
you don't even follow it.
Well, why? So why do the writers get kissed in and the fans don't?
I'm just saying, I think that's more of a way where they can give in. But at the end of the day, it's not about what the league wants or what the Hall of Famers want. The Pro Football Hall of Fame committee has to agree upon that. That's an individual committee itself. It's not ran by the National Football League. It's not the NFL Hall of Fame. It's the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So that's something that they have to deal with.
That's right. As a matter of fact, I just mentioned that I write our Hall of Fame stuff. If you're an NFL.com person like myself, you cannot be a Hall of Fame voter. You have to be a writer for
a third party.
But here's the thing.
Right?
Here's the thing. If you're writing for a Minneapolis paper, obviously you're going to nominate guys like Randall McDaniel and former, not that Randall McDaniel didn't deserve it, but you get the point. Regarding Jason Witten, though, I think that's interesting. I think the problem there is that every time you see a Cowboys game, which is a lot because they're a national draw, what do they always say? Ah, Romo's throwing to a security blanket. You know, and Witten is so famous. I think the fame combined with the production, I think he makes it. You have to admit his production. I mean, he set a record last year for most catches by a tight end in a season. That's some pretty heady company.
Yeah, but I think, and we just talked about this, mm-hmm. I think where the league is at today and the way it's formatted with the rules set up, their numbers are just staggering. Okay,
I agree.
About the first 75 years of pro football. How many 5,000-yard passers do we have? One.
Yep.
The analogy always for me is baseball. Dave Parker and George Foster and Steve Garvey, probably at least two of those names belong in baseball's Hall of Fame, but the numbers are so warped since they retired that now you look at their numbers and you say, oh, those are awfully pedestrian. That's not a Hall of Famer. Same thing. Great receivers now are slept on, and I'll tell you one that Elliot and I know park our cars in the same garage on. Drew Pearson. How that guy's not in the Hall of Fame seems cuckoo to me.
If you look at Gale Sayers, his numbers are pedestrian. He got hurt, yes, we all know that. But when you hit the eye, when the eye sees the game with him in it, you go, man, that guy can play.
Right.
I mean, he had vision like no other running back ever to play. Mm-hmm. And, you know, outside of Jim Brown had great vision too. But to me, I just think you got to be very careful moving forward, how you look at elite players. I like Jason Witten. I think he's a good player. I think he's solid. But when I compare him to the great tight ends, I just don't know if I put him in that category. And I think you shouldn't be – longevity is a good thing. But, you know, I don't want to say it's the longevity gets you in because you have good numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some running backs that are coming up that are like that now.
Oh, you bet.
I agree. I agree with where you're going with this, because longevity too often is ranked too highly. It definitely counts, obviously. I swoon all the time over John Jefferson, who predates you in the NFL. But I mean, he for a 2 or 3 year window, boy, he was wonderful. But of course, his career doesn't measure out as being Hall of Fame worthy because he couldn't do it for any amount of time. But again, just because Fran Tarkenton threw for way more yards than Joe Montana did, nobody thinks Fran Tarkenton's better than Joe Montana. I guess it's a measuring against your peer group at the time you're playing.
You bet.
And is Jason Witten better than Antonio Gates? Does he compare to Antonio Gates at this point, to Vernon Davis?
Absolutely.
I mean, those guys are superior to him.
That's where I would – see, I agree with your – thoughts on catching the ball and the passing numbers. Now, the only thing I'll say about Witten is if Jason Witten's not a Hall of Famer, then I don't know that Gates and Gonzalez are, because Gates and Gonzalez aren't asked to block. Jason Witten isn't actually the closest thing we have. Actually, Heath Miller is a very good example of a tight end that's been asked to block and catch the ball. Witten's just been the best at it. I'm not saying Jason Witten's a great inline blocker.
Yeah.
I'm not.
I don't think that's a strong suit.
I'm not saying that, but he's not Jimmy Graham where they just line him up outside, have a size advantage, and he's basically a glorified wide receiver. All that being aside, Jason Witten aside, to me, Rod, and it was the same way when I thought about your Hall candidacy, can you think of this guy as being the best one or two guys at his position when he played? When you played, to me, it was you and Deion were the best corners, okay? Has Jason Witten consistently been one of the best one or two tight ends in the league? I would say he has. But that's tough.
I'll take Vernon Davis over him.
You take
over
Vernon
the
Davis?
Last 5 years. Better blocker. You talk about the blocking aspect of it as a tight end.
So consistent. But my question is it consistency to get you in the Hall of Fame, or do you have to be great? Is the Hall of Fame that's very good, or do you have to be great? I don't vote. He probably will get in because of his numbers, and he's a likable guy. I mean, he's a great guy. Everybody I've talked
does
to
count.
That knows Jason – it counts.
I've always said if I became a Hall voter, I would vote for Terrell Davis yesterday. Because when he was in the league, Barry Sanders, Emmitt Smith, Marshall Faulk were all in the league, and Terrell Davis was the best. With those guys in the league, and then you always hear the same argument with him. He didn't play long enough, which I agree with you guys.
But you can say the same thing about Gale Sayers.
Exactly. And then they say, well, look at all the Broncos running backs that ran for 1,000 yards. There's a big difference between running for 2,008 yards right. and 1,700 and running for 1,050 yards and six touchdowns. You know, there's a...
Which is like, what is it, 50, 65 yards a game or something
exactly.
like that?
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. I could run for about 800 in the NFL.
What do you think, Dave? Do you think Terrell Davis, Hall of Famer
yeah,
or no?
I definitely think he's a Hall of Famer. Let's play it. All right, let's play Hall or Nothing real quick. Let's blow through some names. Yes or no answers. Rod Woodson, who has his gold jacket. Elliot, who doesn't have a gold jacket, but he does have a three-piece suit.
Sweet,
so I guess that's
a sweet suit, too.
You really
Thank
like
you.
That one,
I
huh?
like the suit.
Aqua
Thank
blue.
You.
I don't know. It's a little too colorful for me. It's
the,
a little...
the suit's not aqua blue.
I know, but I'm not...
That's the accessories.
Many, we're going too much pastel these days. Don't you think so, Rod? Too much latitude with the color shirt you're allowed to wear with your suit
and
tie.
Jamie, who's the wardrobe person here at the NFL Network, she has gotten me into different colors, so... I like the mix-up.
I like turquoise I like and brown.
It. I like it.
I do. I like
it's
it.
Not bad.
Suit yourself.
It looks good.
I have a classic style. You don't know. My style when I put on the suit and tie, I'm like Beau Brummel, who once, a noted fashion critic, who once said, I believe, I said something about, the mark of a well-dressed man is one whose clothes you don't notice. You see? You understand? Like, I wear black suits.
Because they're wrinkled? And
no.
yeah.
No, this is wrinkled. Don't judge me on this, Woodson. I'm not going to have... All right, let's do some names real quick here.
Skinny jeans and Converse. That's
First
damn shirt right there.
Not when I wear a suit, though. I look divine. Now, listen. Woodson and EH. Let's blow through some names here. Jerome Bettis, Hall of Famer.
Man.
You don't want
to
say
go,
it.
Why do you have to go with my buddy like that?
Well, I know what your answer is. I think you've just said it all.
I think it's tough, man. You know, I look at Jerome. I love his career. I think he will get in the Hall of Fame. I just don't know if I was voting. If I had to vote and it was Jerome and TD, I'm taking TD first.
Interesting.
I agree 100%. I think he's Hall of Very Good. I think he gets in eventually. But do when I look at Jerome Bettis, do I say, man, that is one of the elite players of all time.
Let me say this. I don't want to go against what I said 4 minutes ago here about longevity isn't everything. But in that case in particular, there is no, in the history of the NFL, there's no one who is a big bruiser like that, take you head on instead of try to run around you, type of guy from Earl Campbell to anybody else.
John Riggins.
You just said Earl Campbell, John Riggins. That's two right there.
Well, no, but I'm talking in terms of longevity. He was still doing it at that. Well, John Riggins.
Riggins, yeah. But
most of those guys wear out. They fizzle out because they take such a beating. They're done by season six.
It's a great point.
He played forever. He played how many, 15 years?
I don't know if it was
which one?
It was a long
Jerome,
time.
Jerome
Bettis played 13 years. Riggins played 14, and Riggins was darn good.
All right. You know what? To cut it short, because you got to go do fancy TV stuff, some real quick things for you. Jerry Jones said that he believes that Deion could take away Calvin Johnson to some degree. He could slow him down or shut him down, I believe. What do you think about that?
Probably could have.
Could you?
I wouldn't back down from Calvin Johnson. Well, he's a big boy now.
He is big.
But you know what? One thing I love about Calvin Johnson, he's big, he's physical, he's consistent. But for me, big receivers didn't bother me.
But you have size.
It was a small receiver who can create the separation on their breaks that bothered me more than anything. A guy like him might have been like, give me your chest. I'm going to jam the snot out of you. You're not going to outrun me. You're not out jumping me. I don't care if you're 6'3". You're not out jumping me. So
can you give an example like Ernest Givens, Drew Hill, that kind of small receiver? Like who are we talking
people
about?
People like that, you know, Webster Slaughter, guys who are quick in and out of their breaks, you know, guys you don't really think about a whole bunch, but, you know, guys just when they did it for a hot second, they got a yard away from you. I mean, those guys I had problems with. The big guys really didn't. I saw that comment from, you know, Mr. Jones. Maybe Deion could have.
What about – all right, let's
Every elite player has a window. And in my window, I would want to match up with Calvin Johnson.
All right, so in your window versus his window, you can only have one guy, Deion Sanders or Rod Woodson. Who's better?
Oof.
Let's talk about it. Let's talk about all of it.
I can't talk about
it. You can talk about it.
This is what I would
What's
say.
What's in your
this
heart?
This is what I would say. I prided myself – on being a complete player. I can play zone, I can play man, I can play nickel, I can play dime, I can play free, I can play strong, I can blitz, I can return kicks, punts.
So far, everything he said,
I wish they would have let me play receiver, but I had Chuck. No, Chuck was like, no way.
Am I allowed to? Can I field this one? I'd really like to chime
in. I just want to point out, I want to say one thing in your favor. In that playoff game down in the Astrodome against the Houston Oilers, where you jarred the ball free and then Gary Anderson makes the 53-yarder, Deion Sanders wouldn't have ever done that because you popped the – I don't remember who the ball carrier was.
It was a White.
Lorenzo White.
Lorenzo White.
Yep. You're talking about 89 wild card. Yeah. I remember that game.
Oh, that was what
I then
was
you grand. And then they darn near took out Denver at Mile High. I mean,
they should have.
We should have.
Tim Worley fumbled before the end of the
Tim
half.
Worley.
I've talked with Merrill Hodge on more than one occasion about that game. He still is sick about it because that's the best game Merrill Hodge ever had in the NFL.
He played well.
Definitely. But
Hodge also says, let me just say this to him. Merrill Hodge tells me, after the Ravens and Steelers AFC title game 3 years ago, I said, that's got to be the nastiest hitting affair I've ever seen. Three Ravens were knocked unconscious on the field. He said, no. Watch some of those old Oilers-Steelers games in the 80s. Those were harder hitting.
Oilers-Steelers in the 80s and Cleveland Browns when they had Kevin Mack.
Oh, yeah.
Kevin Mack was a beast. That was I played 17 years. That was the only guy that I was a little nervous about hitting because he knocked out Greg Lloyd. This is all in one game now. He knocked out Greg Lloyd, two of our safeties, and Delton Hall.
Yikes.
In one game.
Wow.
Like, dude, come on, please.
All right.
I do not want to tackle this.
Rod
guy.
Woodson, I you're going to get to make your point. Rod, unfortunately, won't hear it. Just say because he's got to go do fancy TV stuff. Rod, we didn't even get into any of it. I wanted to talk Super Bowl 30, the injustice of you guys not winning that one. All right, he's got to that was the game. That was the one that the Steelers should have had. Makes me sick that to this day. I'm sure it makes you equally as sick.
It was.
All right, listen. And Tim Worley's fumble. We could have been in another Super. All right, listen. I want to hear.
I could
about
have made
it
my
all.
Point by now.
You know what? EH, go ahead and make your point.
I want to tell Rod about my great idea.
EH,
the steel curtain
EH
statues outside of Heinz Field. We should have the original front four. We now have lost three of those guys. Only Mean Joe is left. Shouldn't we erect giant statues of the original steel curtain out there to intimidate everybody?
You know, it would be great of doing something very similar to what they're doing in Mile High.
Yeah.
They're putting statues of their guys in the Wall of Fame.
Wouldn't that be cool?
I think that'd be awesome.
All right. So that's Rod Woodson.
Can I get 10 seconds?
Yeah, say what you have to say.
They asked me to pick
Don't insult him, though.
A 50th anniversary Hall of Fame team. All the top players. My two corners were Dick Nitrain Lane and yourself. And I took you over Dion and over his vote for Mel Blount. Okay? Because of everything you just said, the versatility, including switching to safety late in your career. I said, that's the kind of guy you want to have in your secondary, somebody that knows how to play other positions, who can force a fumble, who can make a pick. Deion was a little bit, I call him two-dimensional. He could cover and he could return. And that's, you know, you need a corner that can be versatile. So there you go.
Can I get in on this, too, since we're all asking Rod a quick question? Who are your top corners in the game today?
Today? I like Patrick Peterson. I like Janoris Jenkins. I think Darrell Revis is still that guy. I like Richard Sherman. I just wish he wouldn't talk so much. Just let his game speak for itself, because I think sometimes we forget how good he is because he says stupid things.
Hmm.
And we just say, man, you don't think about he just played a great game, because he'll either mock somebody, he'll say something crazy afterwards, and we forget how good he is. I think he's there too. I think those are the elite players. At the position.
All right. Black tie's waving. You are fun's over.
Ben All right, Roethlisberger, guys. I appreciate it.
Roethlisberger gets a gold jacket, right?
Yeah, that's a good one. I have to think about that.
He has two rings. He's getting one, Woodson.
Go.
All right. He goes. All right. Woodson out the door of Studio 66. EH.
I love him.
He's a nice fella.
He's one of my favorite. You know, this isn't we used to call it jock sniffing back in Texas, but
they still call it that around the country.
Do they? All right. Yeah. Well, I tell you what, he is one of my favorite colleagues we've ever had here. Handles himself with complete class, talks to everybody the same, doesn't matter who it is, and he's a true legend of the game. I mean, it's one thing to work with a former player. This guy was all pro at safety. He was all pro at corner. Pro bowler as a returner, I believe his first Pro Bowl appearance was from kickoff returns. This guy could literally do it all.
The thing with him is, and, you know, he mentioned that he wishes he could have played both ways, but Chaz Knoll wouldn't have it. Before you walked in, I was talking to him about the Purdue years. He played both sides of the ball when he was playing at Ross Ade there, when he was playing in the Big Ten. He could do that. Dang, I wish there's so many other things I have to get.
Well, they had, you know, and Dave, you're a Pittsburgh guy. You can certainly.
I'll tell you what I wanted to respond to what you were just saying there. The thing that hurts him in terms of the profile he has in the history of the NFL is hurt by he was with the Pittsburgh Steelers, who've won more Super Bowls than anybody. He just so happened to be in that window in the 80s when they didn't win any Super Bowls. So it's weird to, even for the people who would push that, generally speaking, are the local fans, that this guy, hold him up and then see if the nation gravitates and embraces those players. And Terry Bradshaw has a different level of regard because he was the quarterback of the team that won 4 Super Bowls. Rod Woodson was dominating. He was arguably the best and at worst 1A at his position, but they didn't get it done in any of the years. And so think about it. He comes back from that knee injury. He's the first guy. This is before Adrian Peterson and Jamal Charles and many examples of guys who can turn around fairly quickly. Woodson got hurt in the first game of the season that year against Detroit on a nasty juke loop by Barry Sanders. Yep. And he was back playing in the Super Bowl, unheard of at the time. The Steelers win that game. He is then, you know, put in the same ballpark as say Jack Youngblood playing on a broken leg and all that kind of stuff. He'd be a different. I mean, listen, he's already got his gold jacket and is considered one of the, you know, 3 or 4 best at his position. But I think he'd be even that much higher.
You're a longtime Steelers guy. You look at that team, and I'm talking about the late 80s team that you're referring to. They drafted Woodson, Delton Hall, Thomas Everett, all in the same draft. I think they got Hardy Nickerson either that year or the next year. We're talking about some major young. I mean, Thomas Everett was a good player. Hardy Nickerson is one of the most underrated players in NFL history, if you ask me. Hmm. And then Greg Lloyd, they also got, I believe, in 87 or 88. That's a lot of good young talent. It's just they could never develop their offense. They could never get a number 2 for Lewis Lips, and then he went downhill. They never had a tight end. Eric Green eventually came, but, you know, his career tailed off very quickly. And then Tim Worley was such a bust. If they could have ever even just gotten a mediocre offense with the talent they had defensively, I think the Steelers could have been good a lot faster than when Bill Cowher arrived in 92. I think they could have been a good team in 90 and 91.
Yeah, the year for them to get it done was obviously Super Bowl 30 because Chan Gailey came in, and that offense was actually pretty good. Neil
right.
O'Donnell had that one golden season. Talk about guys who couldn't do it consistently for any amount of time. But O'Donnell did have legitimately a very strong year. Well, that's almost even unfair. He had a couple of decent years there.
Right, I just mean Knoll's last couple of years would have been better. You know, it wouldn't have ended at 89. I don't remember what they went in 90. I think 91 they were like
79. They're doing that with Bubby Brister.
Too. I know.
That's their quarterback was Bubby Brister.
They should have beaten Denver at Mile High in 89. Of course, Denver went to the Super Bowl.
Oh, we're going to have to watch that one day when we do our show. And it is coming. That day is coming. And it's coming sooner rather than later. That'll be one of the games we look back on. We watch some of the great games.
Would love it.
All right. EH, we could sit here all day and continue to play this game. I don't know. I worry. It's like Black Tie with his movies and not seeing any of them. I feel like you and I, and, you know, Rank likes doing it, and I'm trying to very few people love sitting around talking about what happened 20 years ago in the NFL. But, boy, when Woodson starts mentioning guys like Webster Slaughter, nobody thinks about them. Oh, I do. I know it's weird, but I loved watching Webster Slaughter. Those were some good days in the AFC Central. Or was it the North by then? No, it was the Central then.
It was the Central, and I agree with you. And it's so funny because then I can just instantly think, okay, Reggie Langhorne, Brian Brennan. You just start naming the guys. And
I always dug Hanford Dixon.
Oh,
I didn't like him. He's on the Browns, but I thought he was a cool-looking DB.
Number 29.
Number 29 with the big towel. Oh, but yeah. They would both wear the white towel hanging out of their
That division was so competitive.
The coaches, Steve Weish. I mean, not Steve Weish, Sam Weish, and Chaz Knoll would teach them all. He'd grab them and yell at them after the game about how they were comporting themselves and the stuff they were pulling in games. That's Buddy Rye. Jerry Glanville. Those were good times.
I will never forget, too, when Denver made the Super Bowl again. I think after 87, they got hammered by the Redskins. Chuck Knoll came out in the media and said, I wish Cleveland would have made it, because they would have showed a lot better, fared a lot better, because those teams were so used to beating up on each other all the time. And they all, if you look at the years, they all alternated playoff spots. Cincinnati, Houston, Pittsburgh, Cleveland all made the playoffs in the late 80s.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, that was a very competitive. You're absolutely right. All right, as we await Michael Fabiano to kibitz a little about some midseason fantasy talk here, EH, let's blow through our picks here, shall we? And I'm going to put you up against your toughest challenger yet for the Red Challenge Flag segment. This is, of course, our weekly segment. I'm going to give you a game. You tell me who's going to win, and your opponent will have the opportunity to make a case why that's wrong. Let's start out with, let me introduce you to your competitor. It's one black tie behind the glass.
That's, I thought it was going to be Bane. I was fully prepared.
I'm not going to do my Bane impression. Oh, I could do Boomer Berman, too. I could do that. Let's make it quick, because there's Fabiano right there behind the glass. All right.
All right.
Let's get into it, though, because people like to hear what you guys think here. We'll start out with the San Diego Chargers, 4-3, coming off their bye at the DC Skins. I'm going to start with you, EH.
I'm going to take the Chargers. I don't trust the Redskins at home. Yeah, RG3 may look healthier, but their passing game stinks. Philip Rivers, other than Peyton Manning, most consistent quarterback in football this season. Chargers on the road.
Black tie.
I am not going to challenge that. I've given up on the Redskins
just
offense.
Just challenge it. That's the point.
Well, no, because I don't have reasons to challenge. I've given up on that Redskins offense. Even Pierre Garçon said it. They suck at passing. RG3 came out and said today, hey, he can't control what these guys say. But I just think the Chargers, their passing game, is way better than anything the Redskins have to offer. Chargers win.
It's nice and easy to say this, but season to season, if the Redskins win this game, they'll be 3-6 just like they were last year, and perhaps that is enough to make them feel motivated, and they're in the same bum division that's going nowhere again.
Yep.
First place is 500 at the midway point, so this is still a division they can have. I'll take the Redskins. They have reason to stay in this mentally.
And they still have Dallas at home.
Baltimore, right. Baltimore at Cleveland, 3-4 versus 3-5. Not such an easy game to pick as you would think. Black tie, I start with you.
Not loving this game. I dislike watching anything NFC North battles. It's just the worst football in
AFC,
the world.
Right.
AFC North, yeah. It's just the worst football in the world to watch. Against, like, the Ravens and Steelers, you make that joke how every game is always 14-10 or thereabouts.
13-10, but you know what? We just were swooning over the same division 20 years ago, and now you're bad-mouthing it.
Yeah, I wasn't watching football 20 years ago. Either way, so I got to go with the Ravens, though, just because I trust their offense more than the Browns, even though that defense is kind of tough. I go with the Ravens on the road.
Go ahead.
I'm going to have to throw the challenge flag on that. I'm taking Cleveland at home. Baltimore's historically played well there, but they don't have any weapons. And Cleveland's defense is pretty good, particularly their secondary. Jason Campbell, I thought, had one of the best weeks last year, considering the assignment.
I just don't see him picking that up. That was a once-in-a-two-season performance for Jason Campbell. When last did he do that?
Good point. I'm still taking Cleveland.
Last one, and then to Fabiano here, this is an interesting one. The Atlanta Falcons, 2-5, on the road at the Carolina Panthers. EH.
I'm taking Carolina Panthers. Their defense has given up the second fewest points in the league. Atlanta is devoid of weapons as well. They keep waiting for Steven Jackson. Carolina, Cam Newton has been playing ridiculous as of late, his last three games. I don't see Atlanta going on the road and beating them.
Not challenging that neither. The Panthers defense, I love that defense with Kuechly and the guys. So I think the Falcons just don't have the weapons.
Wait a minute. He said not challenging that neither. That's a double negative. Does that mean, in fact, you are challenging it?
I say this. You want a double negative. No Roddy White, no Julio Jones. That's doubly negative. And I'll tell you something else that's negative is that right now, can you believe that 7 games for both of these teams in? It's like, well, yeah, of course the Panthers are going to beat Atlanta.
I know. That's amazing.
That is crazy. Let's make sure we see the forest for the trees on that one. How shocking that is that we are saying, of course, it's not even something that we have to debate. Well, obviously the Panthers are going to beat the lowly Falcons at home. All right, here he is, everybody. You know him from NFL Fantasy Live. He at NFL.com is the fantasy editor. He is the guru. He is the fantasy Hall of Famer. He is Michael Fabiano. What's the poop, fella?
What's going on, boys?
Hello.
Harrison, this is reminding me of our days in the old podcast when we did Sirius XM and the show with Jason Smith and the Fantasy Predator and Fantasy Michael McDonald.
And Fanbo.
It's great, man.
Fabiano, let's kibitz, because we are not at the halfway point of the fantasy season. In fact, we're past it. Now, I'm happy to report that the Cool Cats, spelled with two Ks, sit atop my fantasy league of record. How's your fantasy stuff going so far this year?
Nine leagues.
Yeah.
Below 501, and that's our Experts League, of course, where Tom Brady has ruined me, but I just made a pretty significant trade hoping to change things. I got Kaepernick and McFadden and Marshall, and I traded away Russell Wilson, Jimmy Graham, and Chris Johnson.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
How many of the assumptions, because it's something that we do every year, and we, you know, you and I, as I've pointed out a number of times, have sort of followed the same trajectory where it comes to when you draft quarterbacks. And now this is one of those years where you and I said, oh, you wait on quarterbacks. There's no reason to go out and get one. And the other thing that you and I agree on is, unless it's Calvin Johnson in exactly the right spot in the first two rounds, you got to go with running backs there. Has either of those things changed for you?
No, not at all.
Really?
Who've been the best bargains right now from a fantasy perspective?
I'll tell you one. Jimmy Graham. The one exception I would have said in those first two rounds was Jimmy Graham in the first round. And people said, in the first round, that would have been a smart play.
So far, so good. Yes.
Right?
Romo's been a fantastic bargain. Matt Stafford has been a fantastic bargain. Phillip Rivers wasn't even drafted, and the guy is in the top 10 in fantasy points at his position. Whereas the bargains at the other positions are they're a bit scarce. They're few and far between. You've got your Noshon Marinos, but you know, Josh Gordon's, for example, Justin Blackman, who was suspended for the first 4 weeks. But I still, if we had a draft right now, would wait on a quarterback.
Okay, but would you take two running backs in the first two rounds? Because, I mean, the value there is not just, it's not just that the position has been diminished in terms of value.
Mm-hmm.
It's that they're inconsistent week to week. The good ones, the good running backs, no longer, I mean, the top 10 running backs, it's not like the virtue of those guys, traditionally at least, has been, well, you know you're going to get 12 points out of them. If they have a crummy week, they're going to give you 12.
Really,
that's not true anymore.
It really depends on my draft position, but I would certainly consider going running back, if not running back, wide receiver, running back, stretching it out to three rounds. But I think what you and I were talking about and what we told people to do back in July and August, it held water because the quarterback position is ridiculously deep. How many people are playing quarterbacks that they picked up off the waiver wire that they drafted after round five?
All right, forget the quarterback thing, because I agree with you about that. I mean, I've done it too. I've picked up Andy Dalton, and
sure.
I have, you know, I'm able to make a go with week to week Kaepernick and Luck. I'm fine with those guys.
If you don't draft running backs early, you're dead.
Are you?
Position.
What
you're
if
dead.
I take? What if I in the first round went Calvin Johnson, and in the second round I probably could have gotten Dez Bryant? Wouldn't I have been better off playing it that way?
Then you're going to be stuck with who at running back?
I don't know, but the good running backs aren't even consistent. If I took Arian Foster, then I'm, you know, right now I'm disappointed. If I took Adrian Peterson, I'd be disappointed. And anybody under that, you're kind of really...
Adrian Peterson, you can't expect him to do what he did again last season. But listen, Noshon Marino, he's been just phenomenal. I mean, no one saw that one coming. Everyone was talking about Monty Ball, including myself, and Marino has been gangbusters. He's been the Alfred Morris of 2013. But to me, I still the wide receivers are rising in terms of value. There's no question about that. So would I draft, for example, Dez Bryant in the second round over someone like Frank Gore? Of course I would. But it depends on draft position. And again, it depends on what's out there too. But I think right now you can say there's probably 10 to 12 dependable running backs. Dependable. That doesn't mean they're scoring monstrous numbers week in and week out, but they're dependable. You're putting them in your lineup and you're like, yeah, I'm okay with this guy.
Doug Martin's killed me, though. I mean, I got J.D. McCoy and I got Doug Martin. I thought, wow, I mean, this league is over now. There's no way I can lose it with those two as long as they stay healthy. And before the injury, Doug Martin was just was couldn't have been more average.
Speaking of LeSean McCoy, I'm trying to get him in the NFL AM league that you and I are participating in. I will give you any running back on my roster and any wide receiver on my roster for LeSean
McCoy. I'm not giving up. Why would I give up the one good piece I have? Why would I trade that away?
Well, you can get a good piece at running back and wide receiver to trade away a great piece at running back. How about that?
The health for the Cool Cats in that league has not been right, and that's the only reason. I'm not giving up the one valued, consistent piece that I have in Shady.
I would just say, you know, to
chime in here. You brought up Jimmy Graham. I think that Rob Gronkowski, when healthy next year, you have to give him a hard look because of his – he's been better than Graham when it comes to scoring touchdowns. And Rob Gronkowski obviously had the injury this year, but if you're sitting there, especially in a 12-team league, and you think about it at the 12-hole taking Gronkowski, I don't think that's a bad idea, especially when the Patriots are pot committed with Danny Amendola. They give him $10 million guaranteed in a five-year deal. And we've seen how injury-prone he is. Mm-hmm. So who's that offense going to run through if he's healthy? Rob Gronkowski.
The reason I traded Graham in the Experts League is because his snap count was really limited last week. I mean, he scored two touchdowns, yes, but I'm kind of feeling like
Well, he's been hurt, though,
hasn't he? I kind of feel like I need to get ahead of things with Graham because at some point here in the next couple of weeks, I'm worried that the snaps will continue to be decreased and the production will start to be decreased as a result. So that's why I traded Jimmy
Graham.
No
one sees more targets. I mean, I don't think Calvin Johnson sees more targets than Jimmy Graham does.
Graham only had, what, 29 snaps last
week?
Yeah, he's banged up right now.
It's a foot.
But that foot's not going to get better. They already had their bye
week.
So
your advice would be, so your professional advice is deal Jimmy Graham if you can. That's a keen note.
If you get stars in return, do not trade him for anything less than stars.
Well, you're trying to give me quantity to get my quality.
I just told you I would give you any running back or wide receiver and wide receiver on my roster. I have good players.
I saw what your trade offers were. I've seen your offers, and I rejected them. I don't have to kowtow to you just because you're in the Hall of Fame. Who do you think you are? I have to demand you want Shady, so I have to fork them over to you. I won't do it. I won't do it out of principle.
I'm just asking you to look at the roster. That's all, my friend.
Give me a couple of names real quick. It's late in the fantasy season, mm-hmm. so there are not going to be any diamonds in the rough. That said, who are some guys that are a little under the radar? And I'll say one for you, and I know Elliot's going to love this one. The guy who I am going to ride with now, I'm going to wait out the Doug Martin thing. Pierre Thomas is very quietly, not just good in real football, but he's a pretty nice fantasy player, and I bet you he can be had pretty cheaply in a trade.
You want a couple of players?
Yeah, somebody's either on the waiver wire or who's about to take off and people aren't paying attention.
You sound like Jack Nicholson there. Like, you want answers.
I mean, he wants answers, and I've got them.
TD's never seen that.
Two players that you should be picking up.
Yes, that's so true. Let's play it. We got to play it, but answer this one first, and then we'll get Black Tie's answer and has he seen it.
Andre Brown, who is expected to come back for the Giants
in week
10.
I tried to get him, and somebody stole him, yeah.
And he will automatically move ahead of Peyton Hillis and Brandon Jacobs on the depth chart because David Wilson is still hurt.
Right.
And Shane Vereen, he's coming back in week 11. You could argue that he was the Patriots' best running back.
Yeah, he's a good player.
Both on the field and in fantasy before he was injured. And a lot of people dropped him because he was out for so long. So those are two players to go out and pick up and stash. And a lot of people dropped Doug Martin. I don't know if he's coming back, but
stash him, right.
Stash him.
Absolutely.
What's the best out there at the running back position right now on the waiver wire? Chris Obanaya? Fozzie Whitaker?
I love the Andre Brown call. I think that's a really strong one. But like I say, I'm going to throw it out again. If you can get Pierre Thomas, he's sneaky. They are using him more and more, and Mark Ingram is nowhere to be found.
Yeah,
what's the kid that they're using behind him? Robinson?
Kyrie Eleison?
Oh, stop it. Is that the Mr. Mister song?
Yeah. All right, let's play it real quick here. Black Tie, Fabiano, I don't know if you've been here for one of our games of this, is Black Tie has seen virtually no movie in existence.
Is that right?
He's seen three movies in history.
Not true. I always say it's any movie that predates 1992.
Hey, our boss, Tom Brady, not the New England Patriots quarterback, but the one who works here, I was talking to him. He enjoys Has Black Tie Seen It. He loves the idea of you not only being assigned the movie, having to guess what it's about in advance, describe what the movie's about based on the name, then seeing it, and then filing a review for us. Maybe this will be it.
You would be surprised, though. Down in the newsroom, you know, Stacey Garcia, who does a lot of the booking for the talent, she's never seen Godfather. How do you not see The Godfather?
Listen.
Have you seen The
Black
Godfather?
Tie is that Black Tie hasn't seen, among the movies he's never seen, any of the Star Wars movies. He's never seen any of the Indiana Jones movies. Why? Because he's not into them. He doesn't know he's not into them, but he knows enough to know that he wouldn't be into them. What? He doesn't see Tom Cruise movies because he doesn't buy Tom Cruise as an actor.
I do watch Tom Cruise movies. I'm not a huge Tom Cruise guy.
What movies have you seen?
I've seen a lot of movies. Just not movies every day. It's 92.
Why?
Just all right, the greatest movies back. Ever made.
All right, all right. Fabiano, let's get into it. Today's movie.
Yeah.
A Few Good Men. I'm going to start with you, Elliot. Has Black Tie seen it?
Not
yet. Don't answer yet, Black Tie.
I'm going to go beginning to end. No.
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 Fabiano.
I've got to agree with Harrison here. No.
I once fancied myself the Black Tie Whisperer because I was on a mighty streak. I could not go wrong here. And lately, he's tripped me up here. I'm going to go, I don't know why, I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say that for some reason that's a movie he's seen. I don't know why he would. Go ahead. Now, Black Tie, tell us.
All right, first of all, what movie are we talking about?
A Few Good Men.
A Few Good Men.
He hasn't seen it.
I haven't really seen it. I've seen it, but not really.
I haven't really seen
nice,
it.
Nice, Harrison.
Why? I missed it. Why? I just said about Tom Cruise. I don't know why. The way you reacted to it initially made me think there's something. Why would he? What do you mean? What do you think A Few Good Men's about, by the way?
It sounds like A Few Good Men. It sounds something noble. So if I had to go the noble route, I would go with something either maybe the farmers or an army.
farmers.
I don't know why. I don't know why farmers came to me.
Farmers.
I would go with.
I'm embarrassed that I said he did see it. Farmers are an army.
I would go with an ensemble cast almost.
Okay. Well, it's a title. Few of them. There, you know, there are a few of them. So.
Yeah. And
what noble movie about farmers has come out in the last. Places in the Heart?
That's all I got.
I was just going to say, yeah, there's some
Legends
there.
Of the Fall.
By the way, I made the lame joke about Kiri Eliason because they wanted to buy some time to actually look it up. It's Kiri Robinson.
That's what I said.
I didn't hear you say that.
Fabiano got it.
I have that song on my phone, by the way. That's a good tune.
But that's not Mr. Mister, is it?
Yes, it is.
Let's do this, though. Now that it's been given a stamp of approval by the boss, he likes the segment. Let's properly now assign
you know
a movie
what?
To
I'm
Black
into
Tie.
It. I'm into it.
All right, so cool. Let's assign the movie right now. I mean, to me, Raiders of the Lost Ark is a great place to start.
I can't get into Indiana Jones.
What does that mean? You just said let's get into it.
No,
I want to do it.
Start,
you won't
I,
see a
I
classic.
I can start off with A Few Good Men. I have seen bits of it. I can start off.
Have you seen The Godfather?
I have not seen The Godfather. Come on. That's a movie I definitely want to see.
Oh, that would have been a great one.
Have you seen Pulp Fiction?
The Godfather.
Okay.
I have seen Pulp Fiction.
That's the best part of Has Black Tie Seen It is when you do land finally. You name off 78 movies, and then finally you say one like Pulp Fiction that he has seen, and his reaction is outraged. Well, are you crazy? Of course I've seen it. What? You haven't seen anything else. Why is that stunning? All right, I love that. Let's do that. Why don't
Few
we do?
Good men.
Why don't we? No. Godfather.
Okay, I could do that.
Yeah, believe me, you'll thank me.
No,
you'll
I
thank
agree.
All of
I agree.
Later.
A lot of movies. Guys, I'm not going to sit here and act like I'm proud of the movies I have not seen. I'll be honest; it does shame me sometimes.
Rambo?
But
you're going to love Godfather.
But
it's
Godfather
really good.
Is definitely
Rocky?
On my to watch list.
All right,
definitely.
One of them, I think.
Have you seen Rocky?
Rocky 1 and 2, I have. Yes.
But yeah, not 3 and 4.
Don't blow through all of them because we have to package these.
Wow.
But guys, let's not bore the audience with what Black Tie has seen.
I don't think it bores the audience.
I think it's a fascinating study in one man's brain that how somebody could get
to understand a background though. I didn't grow up in the States. You understand? So it's not you guys are all here and I am American, but I didn't grow up here though. So it is you watch other stuff. You watch different stuff. I grew up a lot with a lot of British TV and, some other stuff. I grew up in Nigeria a lot, too, and that has a lot of the British influence. I grew up watching a lot of shows as well.
I don't buy any of it.
Well, that's just – I'm just giving you some background here, guys.
I still find it hard to believe that in 2013 – because you're not alone. I think you speak for many people, as Fabiano points out.
Here's the thing with me. Here's the thing with me, though. Like, I want to have these movies down, and I want to get to them. It's just like, I just don't want to devote that 2-hour, 3-hour time block.
You
I'm much much more likely to jump into a TV show.
You're right. Wait, no. Can I answer that? You're right. Watching a mediocre midseason NBA game like you do is a lot better. I'd rather watch Kings Warriors.
What's with the shots? Either way, point is, I'm much, much more into TV shows. I would way likely get into that. Watching The Wire, watching Mad Men, watching Breaking Bad. All that stuff. It's just get into a movie.
All right, you're gonna like this. You know when you say you talk about the 2-3 hour window you need. I am struck by when you listen to interviews with there's a Kubrick documentary that's great, and Woody Allen and Scorsese are both in it, and they talk about I sit and watch that movie. I've seen that movie about 10 times, and they just sit around and all they do is watch movies. And I think How does your life, you're only 60 or whatever you are, I mean, or 70, how have you squeezed in watching that many movies that many times? It doesn't seem like there were enough waking hours in the day. That said, there's something in between, and that's where I want you to get, Black Tie. If you can't be,
I have a list.
I haven't seen anything.
Godfather's on my list. So is Star Wars.
I've spent. You can't be on your deathbed and say that 148 minutes of my life were devoted to watching movies. We got to up that.
I'll get to them. I was going to hit a couple of these movies, and then I was on Netflix. Like, nah, let me go with Friday Night Lights instead. The TV show. I hadn't seen that, so I started watching that instead. It's just easier to get through.
Let's get through the classics. Then we'll worry about the more nuanced ones. We got to get. I want you to get up to speed.
Because
you got to get the pop culture references. I always wonder about that when people walk around making pop culture references, and if you don't get it, then people chuckle, and you can tell when it's a sincere like, haha, I get what you're saying, and then they're patronizing you, and then you have to have that, you don't know what I'm talking about, do you? And then they go, no, which basically is acknowledging you're lying to my face, which is a punch in my face. And then I can't be close with you. I can be friendly with you, but we'll never be really friendly now that you've done that, now that you've punched me in the face figuratively. Let's avoid it all, Black Tie, and straighten it out. Real quick, I want to get everybody's opinions on this. Let's shift gears to NBA ball because I was getting my hair cut like something out of the barbershop.
See, movies. I know you're going to bring it on this.
I was getting my hair cut the other day, and of course it's a Lakers crowd as they're cutting my hair, and we're talking about what the season's going to be, and I'm laughing at how bad the team's going to be. Fabiano, big Lakers fan, in case anybody out there listening isn't aware of that, even though he grew up in New York. Anyhow.
Stop it.
Connecticut. Offhandedly said something about like, well, LeBron, you know, until somebody knocks that team off. I do like Michael Beasley as a spare part, not as the guy. He doesn't have to. I mean, he's the fourth or fifth option on the floor. I think he's going to flourish in that situation. I'm making my case. And I said, you know, besides, LeBron James is the best player of all time. And the one guy went crazy. He said, what are you talking about? LeBron James, what about Kobe Bryant? And I said, wait a second. If you want to make a Michael Jordan argument with me, I'll engage
Magic
you in
Johnson?
That. Magic Johnson is interesting.
Okay.
Kobe Bryant versus LeBron James, I scoff at, and he went wild. What do you say? I'm gonna first of all, you, Black Tie.
Lakers fans, you have to know your
is that
audience.
All it is?
That's
LeBron
all it
James
is
empirically better, right?
Here's the way. Here's how I tell people who never really watch MJ play what Michael Jordan was. Michael Jordan was the Kobe type of Kobe playing style with the flash, the scoring ability, all that stuff. The clutchness, all that stuff. Mixed with LeBron's efficiency. LeBron's stats and efficiency, off the charts. He's had the greatest statistical season since MJ and Magic Johnson and those guys. So it's like mixing and molding those two guys. And that's why MJ, to me, is untouchable. Because he had what Kobe has in terms of like just cutthroat, but also he does it at the efficiency level of LeBron.
Well, it's apples and oranges to some degree because we can compare Dion and Rod Woodson, but the difference between the two, which, and you can go Dion, and that's a valid point that you just could not catch a pass against him, but it's offset by the physicality of Woodson, but at least they played the same position. The difference between Michael Jordan, for all his greatness, is LeBron can literally check five positions on the floor. He can defend all five positions. Michael Jordan couldn't do that.
Understood. And this is, speaking of physicality, this is one of MJ's advantages that people don't really notice. He had some of the biggest hands that you could have as a basketball player.
He was a great defender, but
his hands were huge, and that gave him a huge advantage in terms of like being able to control the ball, in terms of his offensive game, in terms of defense as well. And I understand LeBron is a player who you take in a lab and say, I want to create an NBA player. He's what you come out with. It's kind of like an Andrew Luck now. Like, sure. Andrew Luck is our prototype quarterback. But, I mean, Jordan just had that extra it factor.
I'm going to give you my 2 cents, and then I got to run because I got to do an update for NFL Fantasy Live. Right now, Kobe Bryant has had the better career. LeBron James is on his way to being second behind Michael Jordan and ahead of Kobe Bryant. Kobe's career is, what, maybe 2 or 3 years remaining. LeBron's got a long way to go. He could end up being better than Michael Jordan when it's all said and done.
My counter to that, though, is that Kobe's had a lot of great teams. If you were to put together a rankings of Kobe, MJ's, and LeBron's teammates, if you were to add all those guys, put them in one pot, and draft them, Kobe's teammates would be like 8 out of the first.
You don't
10.
Like Anderson Varejao?
That's my point. Kobe's teammates would be 8 out of first 10.
You have to say when people get into that thing.
You have
Fabiano.
I got to run.
Midway point, see MVP of fantasy.
if I said anybody else but Peyton Manning, people would laugh.
Peyton Manning, you're right. Go ahead.
Love you guys. See you.
All right, there he goes. The great Michael Fabiano. And here we go, too. You know what? Should we do one more game before we say our goodnights?
I'm good with that. I just would like to point out that Black Tie got...
Oh, yeah, you didn't answer the question.
Yeah, and Black Tie got so offended when I suggested that he would rather watch a midseason NBA game, and he acted like, not at all. And then he just gave us a perfect breakdown of NBA history and LeBron's game and Kobe's teammates. Dude, you know the NBA. It's nothing to be ashamed of.
I'm not ashamed of it.
I'm just going to throw one name out there in 10 seconds. Oscar Robertson sure does get left out of the conversation a lot.
Hey, he'll let you know about it, too.
He averaged 30.8, 12.5 rebounds, and 11.4 assists in one season. Triple-double. And he averaged 30 points a game as a rookie.
It's absolutely awesome what Oscar Robertson said, but in the same way, to a lesser degree, but the same way I say I don't care what Don Hudson did because the game was not at it, it was not on the level. Mm-hmm. What it all comes down to is the heavyweight division in boxing now is irrelevant to me, because if you're 220 pounds right now and a great athlete, then you're going to be playing football or maybe NBA basketball. You're not going to be a boxer anymore. Same thing. And the best athletes were not at that time playing basketball.
I agree.
Who's he playing against? The league hadn't yet reached a level where you were going up against night after night.
But to use your analogy, when we had Rod Woodson in here, you said a guy should you. I think you mentioned it with Drew Pearson.
You're right.
A guy should be judged
group.
By his peers, and I mean, who was better than Oscar Robertson?
All right, good point. All right, so last game is I want to bring it to football real quick. One more red challenge flag thing. What do you think, EH? I'm going to start, or I'll start with you, Black Tie, because it's easy to just say the Packers are going to win Monday Night Football against their arch rival Bears. But look at what the Rams did. They really should have won that game against Seattle. So, you know, you don't know what's going to happen. And the Bears probably identify that if they lose this one and go two games back of the Packers, that they're not going to catch them. So it's an important game for Chicago. With that being said, Black Tie, how say you?
Got to go with Packers at home, A-Rod and Jody Nelson and back to that chemistry level they were at two seasons ago when A-Rod won the MVP. Back shoulder fades all day. Packers.
Yeah, I like the Packers too. Bears are injured at defensive tackle. Their starting middle linebacker is hurt, and the Packers just ran Eddie Lacy 29 times. And so I agree with you, TD. And I also have to say, I thought you were going to ask us about Titans-Rams, because to me that's a hard game to pick.
It's funny, I was looking at that one.
It's a hard game.
I think the Titans come out of the bye. That's an interesting stat that I'd like to see updated for this year, how teams are coming out of their byes, if teams are playing better. Off the top of my head, the Rams – oh, no, they were coming off of the Thursday night game, so they had a couple extra days. That's what it was about.
I had the Bills pulling off the upset against the Chiefs.
Wow.
But as of right now, though, Jeff Tua might be starting, so I don't know about that. But initially, I did. The Chiefs have been dicey the last couple of weeks. Haven't really been getting a lot of offense. That Bills defense sometimes can get sacks. They can get some turnovers. Initially, I had them pulling off the upset, but if Jeff Tua starts, I don't know about that.
EH, any chance the Steelers go into Foxborough? A lot of talk about that with Vollmer now out for the year. They've been giving up some sacks. If the Steelers, I mean, they're not certainly putting up huge sack totals, but they're doing a little bit better, at least in terms of getting some pressure now.
I'd feel a lot more comfortable if they got turnovers.
Yeah, they never
I think what they really need to do is run the heck out of Le'Veon Bell. This is the kind of game I want to see him have 30 carries. Patriots have no Mayo, no Will Fork, and they're allowing 156 yards rushing per game over the last four games. 156. I mean, that is getting killed. There's no reason Ben Roethlisberger – go back to the 0-4 Steelers formula. Have Roethlisberger throw it between 23 and 28 times, make some plays, but run the football.
All right, well, we shall see how it all turns out there. Thanks to the great Rod Woodson. Thanks to the great Michael Fabiano. EH, a pleasure. Black Tie, go and see The Godfather, part one, that is. Make sure you don't accidentally pick up part two because you'll be completely lost.
You know me and spoilers. There's no way I'll do that.
Can you pick up Godfather Part 2 and watch it and would you be okay if you missed the first Godfather? Would you be completely lost?
I wouldn't.
I can answer that because I saw Godfather 2 before Godfather 1. I didn't finish it because I felt like I needed to see Godfather, so I had to go back and watch it.
Probably true.
Do people know that Black Tie has a sweet mustache?
I think they do. If they look at our, if they go to NFL.com and look at the NFL Weekly Pick'em page and find the DDFP group that we have there, there's a picture of Black Tie on there.
There is.
You could do a better stash than almost anyone in our company.
All right, so that's that. We will be back later on with more Huey and Applesauce for you. In the meantime, thanks so much, football fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven.